Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
There was all of the things out there, people saying gambling debt, mafia ties, stuff like that. And when I hear that, I just laugh because I couldn't believe that at all. I would think that maybe somebody grabbed him coming in or out of the shop. I mean, he was a good guy. I mean, I think, you know, like I said, all of the stories about mafia and gambling, I think that's all bull.
So the assumption is that they removed him because there was probably some sort of altercation and their DNA would have been on him and they would have known that. And that's why they removed him.
We know everything, who it is, who's on the video, who's involved. It's no secret. It's no mystery of the town who did it.
I don't really have anything to lose at this point anymore. And I don't care, because I only care about one thing, and that's getting to the bottom of all this, truly. So everybody can stop. It's not even for anybody else anymore. It's for myself. Because I'm the only one that knows that I had nothing to do with it, and the people involved that night. But for some reason, the whole world wants to think that I had involvement or knowing of what happened. And that's the furthest thing from the truth. So I just want that to come to light finally. My dad was the person. He was the person. I would have given my left arm for my father. If I could be the one that's dead for him to be alive today, I truly would. I would do anything for him to be back in this world. There's nothing that I wouldn't do, and I would never say that about many other people.
58-year-old Robert Barron vanished from Old Forge, Pennsylvania on a quiet evening in late January of 2017. Robert Barron was just going about his usual routine at his restaurant when something happened. The story goes that he dropped off his son for the evening, and it's believed that he went back to the restaurant to spend the night in the apartment above so that he could be there first thing in the morning for a dough delivery. But by the next morning, Robert was gone, and there was an abundance of physical evidence left behind, leading investigators to believe that a violent struggle had taken place inside of Gigiarelli's restaurant. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 380 of The Vanished, part 2 of Robert Barron's story, Cash. Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. Last week, we brought you the first installment of Robert Barron's story. You learned all about who Robert Barron was and how his loved ones came to discover that he was missing. We left off at the end of part one with the discovery of some crucial physical evidence found inside Robert's restaurant, including blood and a tooth. Both the blood and the tooth were determined to be Robert's. The evidence was chilling. This was no longer a case where you could say, well, maybe he walked away, or maybe he needed a break. Robert Barron had been harmed inside the restaurant that he had dedicated his whole life to. The question now was who would do this and why. At the very end of part one, we mentioned that the car Robert was driving was still missing, but would later be found. At the time, Robert was driving a 2006 Hyundai sedan, but it didn't actually belong to Robert. You heard Brittany and Nicole mention that Robert was actively searching for a new car. The missing car that Robert was driving belonged to a friend. He was borrowing it while he searched for a new one to buy. He had found one he was interested in the Philadelphia area, and had made plans to go visit Brittany and look at the car later in the week. But that would never come to be, because Robert mysteriously vanished. Robert's loved ones and investigators were rushing to find the car. They thought they might find Robert inside. There are endless wooded areas outside of the town that the car could be concealed in, and they were worried that it would be difficult to find. But just days later, it was found right there in the town of Old Forge, on the 100 block of Howard Street, right by the Lackawanna River. But Robert wasn't inside the vehicle when they found it. However, the car did provide further evidence. Court documents state that there was excessive mud on the tires and undercarriage of the vehicle. They noted that they observed blood on the rear driver's side door, as well as a large amount of blood on the interior of the vehicle. Robert's brother Mark told us more about how the car was found.
So that was found that, like, I got a call like at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. It was either that Saturday or Sunday, because it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and it might have been Sunday, early Sunday morning. Yeah, the car was actually found by a friend of the family. And, you know, I was embarrassed that I didn't try to look harder. You know, it was stunning that it could have been where it was. I assumed that it was just taken out of the area and burned or something like that. But a friend of my brother Al's family was a former police officer, felt for whatever reason that based on what he had read about the case, that the car was going to be local, and drove around for two nights looking for it. And then the second night, he found it. Howard Street in Old Forge. In retrospect, the family believed that they probably should have left the car there and tried to catch who was using it. But that wasn't done. It was removed. Because once they determined that my brother wasn't in the car, we thought they should have just left it there and watched it, obviously. People were using the car. That's a fact. Somebody on Howard Street actually saw somebody getting out of that car Thursday, I believe. So people were using the car. The neighbor didn't know exactly who was using the car, didn't know the person by looking at them, but said that they saw somebody getting out of the vehicle. And people around there believed it was moved multiple times, the car. People lived there. So again, it was being used. The other interesting fact is it's rather close to all the people that are believed to be involved.
In the search warrant documents for the car, there were also some other interesting details revealed. They had used luminol at the restaurant, and they believed that an attempt had been made to clean up the crime scene, and that household cleaning products were left behind. Pieces of broken glass were retrieved from the bar area and utility sink, as well as a cigarette butt also in the utility sink, which again is where the tooth was found. The list of items removed from the restaurant listed the Afghan that was found downstairs as bloody. One other strange thing mentioned in those documents was that an employee of Gigiarelli's had told investigators that Robert had received multiple calls on the business landline, and Robert told this employee not to answer the phone anymore. Inside the car, court paperwork was found regarding a civil lawsuit. Robert Barron was the plaintiff in the case. And a month before he disappeared, he had received a default judgment in the amount of $14,500. These documents led to some speculation that this could have been a motive to harm Robert. Investigators were able to lift several latent prints off the door handles of the vehicle, and were hopeful that soil samples from the mud on the tires and undercarriage would help give them a clue as to where Robert's body may have been dumped. Search efforts continued after the car was located. Groups of law enforcement, family, friends, and even strangers formed to search for Robert. They used ATVs, helicopters, dogs, and even divers. Divers searched the Lackawanna River, which is the river that was very close to where the car was found. We can assume that investigators may have theorized that Robert's body could have been dumped there. Several miles downstream from Old Forge, the Lackawanna River meets with the Susquehanna River, which is a much larger river. Investigators also gathered surveillance videos from local businesses, hoping to catch something useful on video. Unfortunately, Gigiarelli's didn't have any cameras. Things seemed to be happening quickly in that first week. Everyone was hopeful that the person or persons responsible would be apprehended quickly. In the small town of Old Forge, where everyone knows everyone, residents were on edge. Was there a killer walking among them? But the case seemed to stall out. Whatever momentum they had early on, it just fizzled out. But the rumor mill kept churning out stories. Some of them seemed far-fetched, like this being some sort of mob hit, or that Robert had some kind of gambling debt. Other rumors focused on those closer to home. Someone who knew Robert and his routine must have done this. Gigiarelli's was a cash-only business, after all. Maybe someone saw Robert and Bobby leaving that evening, and Robert came back and interrupted a burglary. Or perhaps Robert was asleep upstairs when he heard some sort of commotion. They began looking at anyone with possible motives, like that $14,500 judgment. Was that person angry? Bobby told us that the judgment was against a contractor.
Yeah, my father had a lawsuit, so this had to be against the contractor that was stealing money from him. But again, those kind of cases, you have to actually get money from these people, because we've been robbed by several contractors, and you have to put liens on their property, and most of these people have nothing. We awarded $14,000. We never saw $14,000. So yeah, and the guy didn't have any money either. The guy was living off my dad. Oh, he was at the top of the list. Absolutely. It's gotten to the point now where we know who's involved. So everybody else has been basically eliminated through that whole process.
And then there was that mention in the court documents of Robert telling an employee not to answer the phone. Bobby said that there was a simple explanation for that, too.
That was a telemarketer. Telemarketers used to call the restaurant. He didn't tell anybody not to answer the phone anymore. We used to get telemarketers that used to call. There are different people that used to call. He didn't say, no, don't answer the phone. Again, like a lot of things, they're taken out of context, and they're not giving you the full quote. My dad never once said to anybody, don't answer the phone.
We don't have access to phone records for the restaurant, so we can't confirm for sure who exactly had called. In an odd twist, a few months after Robert disappeared, it was discovered that a woman the family had hired to care for Robert's ailing mother had been stealing. Robert was paying her $1,200 in cash each week, and one article in the Times Tribune even noted that in the fall of 2016, Robert had said he was not getting along with the woman, and had asked his wife Maria to handle getting the cash to her instead. Could Robert have caught wind of the theft from his mother? And that was the motive to silence him. She had stolen $36,000 from Helen Barron by forging checks from her checkbook. Here's Bobby again.
That was around the same time she siphoned. She was stealing. My dad was paying her cash. This lady was just, you know, taking whatever she wanted to take from my grandmother. My grandmother was letting her rule the roost. So this lady was going shopping and lying about this and doing that. So the lady siphoned, you know, a lot of money. And then my dad, on top of it, was paying her. She would show up at the restaurant, and my dad was paying her thousands of dollars in cash every week on top of it.
This was just yet another terrible thing that the family had to deal with in the wake of Robert's disappearance, though investigators don't believe there is any connection between the crimes. We also wanted to take a look at another aspect of Robert's life, the house flipping that he was doing on the side. We spoke to Robert's friend Jason, who was a realtor. He told us that they worked on these projects as a team.
I can't even remember how we actually met. I think he had just called about a property that was for sale. I think that's pretty much how our relationship started off, was he was just inquiring about a random property for sale, and it kind of blossomed from there, I guess you can say. He didn't do the work. He mainly was just the money, I guess you could say. We had a little team, little power team. Either I would find a house or Bobby would find a house. If something new came on the market, I would go and look at it. If I thought it was something that was doable, I would call Bobby. I'd go through the house with him, tell him what should be done, how it should be done, what should be changed, where to put the money, what not to do. Then we would bring the contractor to the house, and then he would look at it, and he would give Bobby a number as to what it would cost to do everything that I recommended, and then he would do the work. That's pretty much how it went. I was the brains, Bobby was the money, Larry was the hammer. God, we probably worked together 4 or 5 years. Bobby was a cash guy. He's the type of guy that had mattress money. You know, he's the type of guy that would try to buy a house and come in with a duffel bag full of cash.
This was one thing that stood out to us as a consistent theme in this story, cash and lots of it. This is one thing that seemed to emerge as a possible motive in this case. Was Robert Barron targeted because someone thought or knew that he had a large amount of cash on him? We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. Rumors began to fly around town about Robert's own son, Bobby. Bobby was the last person to report seeing Robert alive. Maybe there had been an altercation between father and son that turned deadly. These rumors were hurtful to the family and caused Bobby to maintain his silence publicly. When you read stories about Robert's case, you will see quotes from Maria, Brittany, and Nicole, but not Bobby. This made us really want to hear from Bobby directly. He was there with his father that night, the last person to see him, but we also understood why he kept quiet for so long. It wasn't easy, but Bobby did eventually agree to talk to us, as you know since you already heard from him. It's no secret that Bobby has a history of substance abuse, and that is likely why fingers were pointing at Bobby. In our first interview with Bobby, he opened up about this.
I have a drug history. The people that we think that are involved in this, I had a past with one of them. So they automatically thought when everything happened, they didn't really do any work, the investigators, from the outset of this, because they just pinpointed me. They just thought I was the one that did it, or I knew what happened. So there was just such a lack of effort and I don't want to sit here and berate anybody, but I mean, it's been very frustrating. I've felt totally alone through this whole process. I had to hire an attorney because they made it seem like that they were going to come after me and arrest me just to hold me down to admit to something that I can't admit to. So I had to spend $5,000 on an attorney.
Years earlier, Bobby had gone away to college, and that was where things got rough for him. And his father was always there to support him. He believed in Bobby. That was when Bobby came back to work alongside Robert at Gigiarelli's.
I started to go to Penn State in Dunmore. I had gone for one full semester. It was basically a waste of time, essentially, if I'm being honest with you. I was starting to heavily get involved into not the best things at that point. Long story short with me is that I've always had the crutch of falling back on the restaurant before in my life when I was younger, and I always do that in the back of my head. He had a really soft spot for me and letting me get away with pretty much everything. So he was just going to let me come back in the restaurant and, you know, do what I wanted to do there. And I think he really, you know, he did the best that he could with what I was doing. I think everybody got mad at my dad for not being harder on me. He did the best that he could. He did a lot of research and he tried and he supported me in his own way. Maybe it was wrong what he did, but he supported me in his own loving way. And I'll never forget him for that.
My father and I, because that's basically who it was there doing everything, especially the last several years or so, was my dad and I. So everything was pretty much regimented every day, because you're talking about everything is essentially fresh here. Obviously, I learned from my dad, who was the best at that. you know, I got really good. I watched them for many years. I didn't really bake pizza for the longest time. I basically fooled around and, you know, basically got to do whatever I wanted to do, bartend, wait on tables, and get the extra money. Why, you know, I selfishly let my dad do the harder work for a long, long time. To get to wake up every day, regardless of the mind frame I was in with what I was doing at that time in my life, I still knew every day. It wasn't lost on me that I got to live my life doing what I wanted to do with the person that I mean, it didn't get any better than that. For me, and even for my father, to spend time every day, and I, of course, I aggravated the hell out of my father because of my OCD and the drugs and of course, things like that. But, I mean, for us to spend every day together, I mean, you had to really, truly love that person. And it was an honor every day, and to just to have that abruptly taken from you.
There's a group of people that the family and some others believe are responsible for Robert's disappearance, or at least they helped with the cleanup afterward. None of them have been publicly named as persons of interest, so we aren't going to name them, and we will bleep their names out of the interview clips throughout this episode. But one of the reasons that people thought Bobby might be involved or had knowledge of what happened was that he had a relationship with one of these people. Brittany gave us some further information on who she believes to be responsible and what ties the one person has to her brother in the restaurant.
We know who it is. I'm speculating. I'm 99% sure, though. I mean, it wouldn't be anybody else, and there's a lot of evidence on these people that they're involved. A drug addict, as we know, is in debt to his drug dealer. He needs money. Gingerelli's is all cash. He knows my dad has an apartment upstairs. He knows the whole ropes of the layout. He thinks he's going to go walk in there, grab some money, and leave. My theory is my dad walked in, and it went bad, and it got out of hand. My dad would never, if he found a random robber in there with a gun or something, my dad would say, just take the cash. I think it's someone he knew, and he walked in, and I think they were already in the restaurant. I know they were. There's so much evidence on these people, and they paid their drug bill, and now all of a sudden, these people have all this money on them. It's known they didn't come home until 6 a.m. in the morning. They're on video. Like, I don't know what more evidence you need to prove that it's this person. I don't think it was planned. It's no mystery, I guess, is my point. That there's no question as to who did it. What has to be done to prove it? What more has to be done? Because it's very evident already. The blood was mostly cleaned up. I know. That's what I'm saying. They knew they had all the time to go back and clean it up. There was blood found on the passenger side of the car that was found right down the street. I was like, why would they harm my dad? One kid was someone my brother used to hang out with, and my dad gave him and his family free pizza every Friday. My dad would let him and my brother watch games at the restaurant every Sunday when it was closed. My dad bought them Yankee tickets to go see a game and stuff. So I was like, why in the world would he harm my dad? But he was a suspect from the start before me speculating that, because I was just kind of like, why in the world would he hurt my dad? My dad was so good to him. And then as more time passed and just talking to people and hearing things and surveillance cameras, I know that we put on the news, it kind of became very evident that, okay, you know it was him. You know he's involved to some capacity. I know he wasn't cooperative at all. He won't speak. They arrested him a few times after this happened, I know, and I'm speculating that it's because they're trying to get him to talk. I don't know that for sure, but he was arrested maybe 2 months after this happened to my dad in March of 2017. Nothing related to my dad. People don't come up to me as much. Like, a lot of people come up to my mom and just say, oh, have you heard anything? You know, I can't believe, like, they still didn't arrest him. Everyone says his name. Like, the one time I really witnessed it, I was just at the grocery store, and I thought this lady said, like, have a great day or have a good day. And she said, any update on your dad? And I looked at her because I'm like, how does she even know who I am? And she's like, I graduated with him. He was such a good guy. Talking very highly of him. I was just like, no, I'm like, I don't know if, like, I'm like, we all know who did it. And she proceeded to say this person's name. And so it's just like, you know, everyone knows. It's no, like, it's no mystery is the point that I don't know. If, like, obviously people that don't live in this town don't know that. It's not some big mystery of who did it.
Bobby explained to us that his relationship with this one person revolved mostly around drugs. But they did hang out for a period of time in the years prior to his father's disappearance.
We hung out for a couple of years there. We would just get together a couple nights a week. And he and I would get together. We'd watch sports or something at my apartment because he always lived at home with his mother. He never really held a job. He was never one to really fend for himself. He's got a brother. I wasn't really ever really around the brother. And the other person that you've heard the name of, I've only been around him a couple times.
While we were researching this case, we felt like there must be more to the story than what has been put out there in the media, but we struggled to get a firm grasp on what that could be. It was while we were talking to Nicole very late in our research that she mentioned something that seemed important that we hadn't read or heard anywhere else. Here's Nicole.
My brother, as it's been put out there, has a bit of a history of substance abuse. My dad kept my brother safe, alive, and breathing. I told my brother that my parents have done a lot for Bobby to help treat him and get him better. And so the one guy had an altercation with my brother that day. He had a little altercation. They met up outside of the restaurant. They conversed back and forth, and the end result wasn't very good. My brother, I guess, expressed anger towards for how he treated my brother. These people would come around. You know, my brother and have been friends. Why would do this is honestly because the only thing I can think of is looking for money. That was the day of when my brother had the altercation outside of the restaurant. So after that, it was just another business day at Gigiarelli's restaurant, or so we thought, until the next morning.
Hearing about this alleged altercation between Bobby and one of the people the family suspects was interesting. Could that have led to what ultimately happened later that evening? We wanted to learn more about this, so during our second interview with Bobby, we asked him to explain what had occurred that day. Bobby was quite candid with us about what had happened.
Everything just needs to be put on the table here. I don't really care at this point anymore. I've been through enough. Again, I don't know what was going on at that time. I think I was more or less taking Suboxone at that time. So this would be obviously January of 2017. For some reason, I felt like procuring crack that morning. I had a run with that prior to heroin. I reached out to him to procure crack for some stupid reason because I didn't know anybody else that could get it. My main connection at that time, she and I, the person that we were procuring our heroin from, that was his thing. That was it. He wasn't interested in doing anything else. So anyway, I decided to text and he tells me he could get it down the road. He shows up. He tells me he's going to be there. I just tell him a smaller amount. It was $50 because I never trusted him. So he told me that he was going to need to get the money. So once he told me that, I wasn't going to spend several hundred dollars knowing that the money was going to probably rob from me. And coincidentally enough, that's what ended up happening. So he proceeds to show up at the restaurant, the side street of our restaurant, probably, I don't know, not long afterwards. And it was weird. He didn't have his customary red Jeep with him. So I found that right off the bat, things are strange. And he tells me, we have to go up here, up the road here. There used to be a grocery store, an old forge, right up the block from our restaurant. He told me that we have to go back there, and he had taken me up there. It's just a short minute or two walk up the hill from where our restaurant was by the church. There's bushes here, and there used to be a customer of ours that had come in our restaurant for years. He lived back that way, and I had known that. So he takes me back there, proceeds to tell me to give him the $50. So I hand it to him, tells me he has to go out in front and do this and grab this from the person. So he does so. And of course, within seconds, I hear the car door close, car pulls away.
And I instantly realized what's going on, that I've been had there, which I, of course, obviously I had known about that in my mind going in, but I still wanted something so bad that I was still willing to try it. So I was left there, and this guy that I had just previously mentioned, he comes outside. He says, "Bobby, what's up? What the hell are you doing back here, obviously? You know, why the hell are you in my backyard?" I said to him, "Does somebody live there?" Because led me to believe that the person that he was procuring this drug from lived in this adjacent apartment. And he proceeds to say to me, "No, nobody lives here. The other side has been vacant for years or whatever." And of course, I feel like an absolute asshole. Again, there wasn't an altercation. I don't know where anybody gets that from. There were text messages that I don't know why police say that. There was no altercation. There wasn't a verbal altercation. He stole money from me. The verbal part of it comes in afterwards from myself. And if I could get you the text messages, I would. And show you that I'm the one sending text messages and phone calls to him. I would hope not, that you're not going to do such a thing, because I'm telling you I'm going to call your mother that you stole $50 off me. Or you're a scumbag. You're a piece of garbage. He never responded.
This event left Bobby feeling paranoid. So he went back to his apartment to retrieve a stash of cash that he kept there. Because this friend, or former friend, also knew that Bobby had kept a large amount of cash at his place.
I wasn't big on banks at the time, so I had cash saved up. And I had it at my apartment for years. I was building it up. And I was very nervous because I had known about this. We had gotten close a couple of years before that, for about a year, year and a half. He had known the routine of the restaurant, the ins and outs, and everything. Not ever thinking, obviously, that somebody's going to do something like this. I was really nervous. So I had gone back to the restaurant. I didn't tell my dad exactly, obviously, what was going on with the crack and all that stuff. I just told him, you know, "We need to go back to the apartment. I'm really nervous. I feel like somebody," I threw out another kid's name from the town that, you know, my dad didn't think as poorly of. And this is the thing that I want to make clear to everybody, which I've been trying to make clear for years, is that I had no clue what was about to happen that night. Nothing at all. I was just thinking about being robbed at that time. I'm sending him text messages telling him I'm going to go to his house. I'm going to call his, talk to his mother, like we're 8-year-old children or something. But anyway, that's how pissed off I was at this scumbag at that time, for lack of a better word. So if you go through my phone records, which people have done, there's nothing in there at all setting up anything. And I would think that you're setting up something if you're telling people to come to your restaurant. So anyway, yeah, I got the money. I think I had gone back to the restaurant to do a couple more things. I kept it on me then. I brought it with me, I believe, that evening with me. $111,000 in cash on my person in a ball. It was all hundreds and fifties, basically, and some twenties. That's why I was able to keep it in my winter coat in two separate piles. And of course, I have in my head all day, I'm just angry at this kid for this, never knowing what was about to transpire later that evening, obviously.
While this story about getting robbed of $50 and then going back to his apartment to retrieve $111,000 in cash to keep in his coat sounded strange, we wanted to keep following Bobby's version of events. Bobby's intuition may have been right. Something was about to happen. He just never imagined that his father would be the target. Nearly everything you see reported about this case is someone else relating what Bobby has said happened the night that his father disappeared, but not directly from Bobby. We wanted to hear from Bobby about what he remembers from that night, and he told us that he was there at Giugiarelli's with a woman that he had been seeing, who would sometimes pick up a shift at the restaurant on Wednesdays.
Well, the night before, it was a slow night. It was a Wednesday. I don't want to call it dating because I never considered her like a girlfriend, and I was seeing her because I got back involved with heroin again at that time. And I was trying to look good to my parents to make it seem like I was with somebody at that time, when really all I was interested in doing was going down there and procuring heroin and just sitting around and doing whatever we were doing. So this girl that I was seeing, whatever you want to call it at the time, that was a big point of contention, which I'm sure you've heard about from at least Brittany or Nicole, that I had her working at the restaurant against everybody else's wishes. And my dad, he did. He just let me do whatever I wanted to do. I don't know that she wasn't involved in this either. So that night was a really slow night. Like I'm talking about the dead of winter, those early nights in the week were dead. So that night, again, I'm not thinking anything of it, but supposedly somebody locked the side door of the restaurant. Like a lot of things happen that make people think that I had something to do with something that night. Because supposedly customers came and tried to get in at 8 o'clock or somewhere thereabouts and said the side door was locked. So the only thing I can think of is that this girl locked the door. If the door was in fact locked, because I don't know that for certain. My dad wasn't really there that night much. He had gone. I mean, he didn't like being around, even though he never really made that really clear to me. Nobody liked her. Her dad usually came and picked her up. She was only there since I think it was August or September. So you're talking maybe 4 months she's there. But in the entirety of that time, she was picked up by her father while he would come in and have a couple minute bullshit conversation with my dad and whomever was at the bar at that time. That night, she says he didn't feel well. That's the story she tells me afterwards. So he's outside. And again, all this while behind the scenes, there's stuff in motion that I have no clue about. So the reason I mention this is because I don't know if she's not involved. I don't know if she's not, speaking to these people to leave something open. I don't know when I'm in a stupor if this girl could have gone out and decided to forge my key. So again, I don't know the whole story because she barely even, like, you wouldn't believe how bad she was for, the time we had spent together for over a year at that point. With what had happened, what was going on, I barely got anything out of her at that afterwards. Whatever she did, whoever she got picked up by, I still don't know to this day. Only she can tell you that, and whomever picked her up.
One interesting thing to note about something Bobby mentioned that we had not heard previously was that some customers reported that the restaurant door was locked for some period of time before closing. Bobby doesn't believe that it was, but it's an interesting detail to consider. If that's true, what could it mean? We had also never heard about this woman that Bobby was seeing, and no one else suggested that perhaps she had made a copy of Bobby's restaurant key. Bobby said that his father wasn't at the restaurant for much of the evening on the 25th, but that he later returned with some dinner for Bobby.
My dad wasn't there, came back later, brought me tacos, the infamous tacos that I'm sure you've heard about already. My mom made tacos that night. I was in a bad mood. The restaurant was slow. I wasn't even pleasant to my dad. I was never really ignorant to him, though, usually. I was just a little snippy with him. That's how much love and respect I had for him, that I was usually just a little snippy with him. And, of course, that's another thing I have to live with. He was good with me still that night. We would make our little snide remarks to one another like we always did. And he came back at the end of time. Everybody says a different time, but the time I recall was somewhere around 9:30, 25 of 10. It's when he came back. He was really tired that night. There was a lot going on with the houses that he was flipping. He had a couple houses because he was doing well. His other contractor was going well. And this guy ends up finding out he has cancer. So I'm just kind of touching on things and piggybacking off them to explain what's going on at that moment in time. It wasn't any different, his demeanor. We're thinkers. We're always thinking about something. That's how it is. It's a lot of pressure at that time. My dad had a lot of money out there at that time with these places, these properties. And this guy wasn't working. He had cancer. I mean, there's a lot going on. So yeah, he brings the tacos back. I heat the tacos up in the kitchen. I didn't finish them because I ended up bringing them back to the apartment, the rest of them. He's down at the bar with his feet up at the adjacent bar. One of us, we always sat in one or two spots. I just thought it was going to be like that forever, to be honest with you. I mean, that's why I just tell people I want to shake people, thinking, why would I have wanted anything to do with letting people into our lives to ruin what I had going on there. But anyway, whatever. So he was tired that night. He was basically falling asleep. And I just said, you know, Dad, don't worry about sitting here and relaxing and eating. Let's just go. That's what we had done. It's the normal thing. Check the doors being locked several times over, like I always had. Check the basement door, down the basement, see if, you know, the light was off, make sure everything was off, because, I mean, I had the most important life in the world living upstairs, so I always was cognizant of that fact. Never liked that he lived there because of how easy the access would have been for people to get in there, never thinking that something like this was going to happen, but you don't think anything's up.
Bobby says that after locking up the restaurant, his father drove him a few minutes away to his apartment, where they spoke for the last time. They had a brief conversation about trash, and then Bobby went into his apartment for the night, and Robert was going to drive back to the restaurant and go to bed.
He's going back and he's going to bed. He said something about garbage. There was garbage at the time, some kind of garbage that I had to get rid of. That's the last thing we said to one another. Like, that's the last words. Like, I play those over and over in my head for 5 years and almost 6 years now, and another week, you know, talking about the garbage. You know, son will take the garbage to one of the houses, where it'll pick the garbage up, see you in the morning, you know, love you, that kind of thing. And I kind of just grunted at him because I was in a bad mood. I said, okay, Dad, whatever. And that's really difficult to live with, too, that I, you know, those are the last things that we said to each other, and I just pulled down the street like you always did, and it's just status quo. You know, you go, you walk up the steps to the apartment, and the same routine that's been going on forever, for years, and I'm talking years and years and years since after high school. Same thing. Go home, go back to Sussex Street, go do whatever I'm doing that night, whatever terrible thing I was doing that. I don't think I did anything that night, to be honest with you. I think I had gone back. Relax. I don't sleep. So I'm up until close to 2:30 or even later in the morning. Some nights I don't even sleep, period, until maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours before it's time to go into the restaurant. I remember the movies I watched on TV that night on Stars. And, you know, you fall asleep and it's just nothing out of the ordinary. I've told everybody the same story because it doesn't change. I don't know what else anybody wants me to tell them. I didn't leave. So there's really nothing else to talk about. It was the same night. Nothing. You don't think anything's happening. I'm just thinking about, you know, this scumbag robbing me earlier in the day. But other than that, it's nothing different.
So Bobby says that after his father dropped him off, he just stayed at his apartment the rest of the night. Now we're going to fast forward to the next morning. Bobby walked us through that morning as it was becoming more and more apparent that something was seriously wrong.
The morning of, woke up at the normal time. Yeah, and then I sent my dad, you know, the text message just to say, every morning it was the same thing. Dad, I'm up, ready, whatever. He would either say, I'll be there in a couple minutes, or I'm on my way, and hear the horn beep. I started to become obviously nervous. He always picked me up in the morning. Selfishly, I wouldn't walk to the restaurant. So that was another thing, of course. Everybody found odd that I decided to walk to the restaurant. I didn't have a driver's license at that time. The thing that sticks out to me on this trip over to the restaurant, my Uncle Vince, my great Uncle Vince, my grandfather's brother, who was still bartending two nights a week at the restaurant at that time. So he happened at that time of the morning to be driving by the apartment, which was on Sussex Street in Old Forge. So I'm going down the road and I saw him, which was big because he has stuck up for me in a lot of interviews now, saying that he saw me that morning, obviously. So that's like a big thing. He saw me that morning. And I told him, I was just worried. I said, yeah, I can't get in touch with my dad. I think I explained everything. So I just have to get over there. And that was about it. It was quick. It was just a couple, probably wasn't even a 2 minutes conversation, because I was really nervous at the time. Because again, like never, ever, almost never, I did not see my dad in the morning. So I get over there relatively quickly because I'm kind of essentially running. And then I get there and there's no car. My dad's car is not there. He was driving somebody else's car at the time. So the doll was outside. I'm panic stricken at this point now. And then it's nothing compared to what I'm about to walk into. You know, like my whole life is flashing before my eyes. So I don't think I called my mom. I think I may have texted her or something. Like, are you with dad? Something like that, you know, because, I mean, I want to, again, contrary to what everybody thinks, I had no idea what I was walking into that morning. So I proceed to make the first left up into the kitchen. As soon as you walk in our side door, the kitchen, there's two steps, and that's our kitchen. And I forget the exact order of things, but I think I was calling his phone at that time, and it starts ringing. And I'm thinking, what the fuck is going on here? My dad's cell phone sitting on top of the washing machine where we wash our dishes in the kitchen. The phone's there. My dad's phone's there. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, what's going on? So I proceed to go down to the bar area. And there's a blanket. When I had walked down the steps into the bar area there, the closet doors were open where we kept we had a utility sink in the waiting area. It was cordoned off by a closet door. You know, so obviously that's where people waited. Obviously, where it's an eyesore to have. So we had a closet door. The closet door, though, was open that morning. And I'm noticing little things of blood there. And I'm like you can imagine, like I'm in my mind, I'm flipping out here now. I'm what the hell is going on? So I'm calling my mom. I'm calling my Uncle Mark. And this is another thing that I don't know if anybody's told you this. But again, they found really strange in the beginning. I started actually putting the dough out. I started actually doing our morning process, thinking of my dad. My dad, if he were around there, like the business is the big thing for us. Like you have to be ready to open at night. So I'm thinking that in my head there too. I didn't want him to be mad at me when he came back because nothing got done and the dough dried out. So we can't use all that dough. So essentially the night's a wash. So I didn't know what else to do at that time. So I started rolling out the dough.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. One question we had for Bobby was if this friend had knocked on the door, would his father have answered? We know that Robert knew him and often gave him free food. Would he have opened the door to help this man had he knocked late at night?
My dad would have let him in, yeah. Let him in, yes, probably. That's just the kind of guy that he was. If somebody was acting like they needed help or something, that's just how he was, though. You know, because that's the kind of era that they came from, too. Where you never thought about those things. He used to leave his keys in the car. I mean, the door would be unlocked. It's not like it is now where you have 900 different security cameras in your house to make sure there's nobody coming in from the back sideway door. If he knocked on the door, which I don't know what happened. I don't know how they got in. I mean, it wasn't Fort Knox. Let's just put it that way. There'd be times that he wouldn't take money to the bank. He'd take it once a week, usually. There'd be a lot of cash upstairs.
Other family members we spoke to disagreed with Bobby on this point. They thought that Robert would not have answered the door for these people. They believe they must have gained access in some other manner, despite there being no signs of forced entry. We have seen reports that it was believed the restaurant would only have had a few $100s in cash because it was a slow night. We were told by various family members that money was taken. But we never got a firm grasp on how much. We heard low figures like a few hundred to a few thousand, up to $40,000. Being that this was a cash business, the exact figure is difficult to pin down. Though we thought there might be some sort of ledger that was kept to document how much money there was, we're still unclear on the amount of money that is believed to have been taken from the restaurant that night. Bobby explained that it was a bit of an open secret that he had taken money from the restaurant in the past to support his addiction. He believes his father knew and was in a way enabling him, but this was done out of care. He didn't come down hard on Bobby because he just wanted to make sure that he was alive and safe, and having him by his side at the restaurant was a way to look after his son. But because of this, Bobby says that he wouldn't have needed to set up his father or be involved in some plot to burglarize the restaurant because he had access to the money. However, Bobby believes that this friend also knew where the money was because he had been there when Bobby took money in the past.
My dad was the only person that knew I had the money, and he knew that it was taken. Most of it was taken from the restaurant, and he still treated it like it was my own. That's how he was. I made tips. My sisters and I, we made tips when we worked, and then I took extra money off the top. My dad was letting me control the money in the restaurant. I was taking money at the end of nights. I was the one counting the money at the restaurant. That's how my dad just let me do whatever I wanted to do. I was going upstairs. He was leaving the door open. He was leaving thousands of dollars laying out upstairs. So it was sitting upstairs. There was a lot of money at one time upstairs in the apartment that he lived in. And I was picking it, taking some of it from time to time. Even when he got a safe, had gotten a safe. I remember I had broken the safe that we had gotten him for Christmas one year just to get the money out, obviously to get drugs. I mean, and this kid going back, this was a couple years before. I would go through a window to get upstairs into the apartment at the restaurant. And was there with me. Yeah, I mean, he watched me go into the window to get the money. So, like, he literally knew the ways that I would go in there and get the money. This kid knew that there was money upstairs there, okay? Not because I thought about anything. You have to understand, when you're in that state of mind, you're not thinking about things. And you're never thinking about somebody's going to come back and murder and ruin your life like that either. Who thinks those kind of things, except the people that actually are able to follow through? You don't think, I'm not thinking about that. Never did that cross my mind that somebody's going to come and tear my whole world apart. It was kept in a little safe that you could smash off the ground to open it. That's how I got into it. So I forget at that time how much money was actually still there and what wasn't. There was money upstairs. There was definitely money upstairs. Again, I don't know the exact figure. He had gotten rid of some of the money. Because I kept taking. There's only two people that know what kind of money was upstairs. My dad and me. That's it. Nobody else. Nobody else. Brittany, my sister, my mom. Nobody knows. I'm telling you, nobody knows. Nobody knows. You know, the safe was gone. I told them how much money was up there. How much money I thought was up there. There's no way of anybody, I guess maybe $50,000 or something like that. But nobody knows. My dad was putting money away. He was investing money in things.
Bobby explained that he's been accused of having some involvement in what happened to his father because he knew the one person that some believe is involved. And because of his struggles with substance abuse, people accused him of needing money to pay off a debt. But Bobby refutes this.
I literally handed them my phone. I did an interview with the local police for hours. That night, like I was there for probably 7 hours from the DA's office, and I gave him my phone. There's nothing for you to find in my phone. You would have found something in my phone with how they're able to break down phones nowadays. You're going to find something in there that says do this or do that, or I owe this person. I didn't owe anybody money. I never owed anybody money. That's just what I've gotten now for 6 years is owed you all money to. You owed money to this guy. No, again, but nobody else has been involved in this like I have. I mean, nobody else has their finger pointed at them other than my mother. My mother has as well. They've wanted actually my mom to take a polygraph test for several years now. They actually said my mom helped me clean up the scene. That's how stupid they were.
There was a lot of chatter around town and on social media about Robert's disappearance. Nicole explained that it was pulling together bits and pieces of things that helped them come up with their theory of what happened that night and who was involved.
There were just some clues, we did our own detective work. You know what I mean? We checked somebody was on his page the morning this happened, or the morning after. saying that she drove in from out of town to help him out at 5-6 in the morning.
I don't even know if it's his girlfriend or his wife. Somebody who's related to her called out in a Facebook post saying, oh, you only ran because you didn't kill Bobby, right? And just making him look suspicious. We were in contact with ex-girlfriend as well. She was staying with him at the time this happened, and he was gone the whole night. And she said that he came in out of breath, and he was very muddy. And he went out that night, and apparently he was running from police. That was his story to her. He was running from police. That's why he was out of breath, and he was running through wooded areas. That explains the mud. And he got back super early morning. So that was after he finished. Then he went home. I mean, these people definitely, they were around. They knew. I feel like they knew the routine there, too. They knew the hours of the operation. They might have even been watching my dad for a while. And maybe it really didn't mean to get this out of hand. Maybe they just really wanted to go in there. Maybe he really was fiending for something. And he needed to pay his dealer off to get his fix of heroin or whatever. Maybe he just went in there. He got in or hid in there or something and thought he was going to grab some money. And maybe I don't really think anybody intended to go in there to hurt my dad that night. I don't think that was anyone's intention to go in there and physically hurt him and kill him. My dad didn't have bad blood with anyone to that extent. And I mean that truthfully. He wasn't out, like my dad wasn't out partying or gambling. If he wasn't with us, he was working.
This information from the one person's girlfriend about the mud is interesting, because we know that when the vehicle was recovered, investigators noted that it was muddy, and two of the people the family believes are involved actually disappeared for a period of time and were reported missing. One of their family members made a social media post referencing stealing tools and killing Robert. A couple of years ago, the Barons shared a surveillance video with a local ABC affiliate, WNEP. Gigiarelli's didn't have any surveillance cameras, but this was from another business a couple of blocks away on Main Street. The news report was a little vague, which was likely intentional, but it seemed as though the Barons had been given this video years after the fact, and we were confused as to why someone had kept it. We always hear about surveillance videos needing to be retrieved very quickly before footage is lost. So we were unclear on how this footage came to be found years later. Robert's brother Mark cleared up the confusion for us and explained that the police had this footage all along, but the business owner was told not to share it with anyone, and they didn't until years later.
They were keeping things close to the vest that, you know, they didn't tell us they had video from all these different places. We were just hoping that they did. They had it from the beginning. We just didn't have it. It's just from a local business. We didn't actually receive it until a couple of years after the fact. We had hired a private investigator in the beginning to try to collect video from the businesses because we weren't exactly sure that, you know, that was being done, but it was. And we were actually stopped from getting it. Police told the businesses to not give us any of the video. So this guy, he may have saved it off his system to give it to them initially and saved himself a copy. That may have been what happened. I actually never did ask the person why they still had it, because we then went to another place and asked if, you know, perhaps they did the same thing, and they did not. So what you're saying, you know, was a concern of ours early on, that, you know, if you didn't hit all the places or didn't hit the right places within 30 days, it was going to be gone. Anyway, this person said that they apologized in the beginning for not providing us with any video, because it was really about looking for the car, I guess, early on is what you were really kind of looking for, is to see the car, not believing that people would be walking places and stuff like that. So again, we went to the business and they did provide us with the video, not the specific video. They just gave us all their video, like a 12-hour period.
The theory of what happened that night is that this one former friend of Bobby's needed some money for drugs, and he and possibly others knew that Robert kept cash on hand and went to the restaurant in a moment of desperation, then went to purchase drugs. Mark told us more about what the video shows.
We had heard that there was a transaction that took place or a meeting at a specific time. That's because looking at video, as I'm sure you know, is a painstaking task. And if you blink. So we knew roughly when to look. And that's, well, yeah, the one fellow is, which is, you know, interesting in that only from the standpoint that someone that drove by and supposedly saw people out in front of the restaurant, saw people wearing shorts and shirt sleeves, supposedly. But that's from that person. I think it was unseasonably warm, or it wasn't that cold. Yeah, it wouldn't be weather, though, where you'd be wearing shorts and short sleeves. There is a belief that something happened initially, and then people came to help out, additional people. And I don't know how many, you know, who was there initially and who was there after the fact. That's a thought that some people have, that there could have been additional people that came after the fact to help with the cleanup, so to speak.
On the video, you can see a man in shorts and a short-sleeved shirt walking by. And then there's another man who seems to be bundled up in a strange manner, like a snowsuit or a hazmat suit. It looks odd. This man is pulling a rolling suitcase. The weather that night was a bit warmer than usual for a January evening in northeastern Pennsylvania. It was in the 40s. It was neither shorts weather nor snowsuit weather. But Bobby believes he knows exactly who these people are. He thinks one is his former friend, and the other is that friend's drug dealer.
He's the one that we think is the one that's wheeling the suitcase. The other person is he's the one in the white t-shirt. This particular camera about this video that I'm referring to was down from our restaurant. It was about a block or more down from our restaurant. But that's where they were walking. They were heading down that way. And our big thing is that there was an Old Forge police car you could see vividly and clearly in the video. This is at almost 1 o'clock in the morning or so. I mean, this guy, he's dressed up like a polar bear with a suitcase. He's wielding a suitcase down. And it looks like because I just knew his mannerisms. As soon as I saw the video, I said, that's because of how he smoked the cigarette. And we came to find out that he owed money. Is like the biggest two-bit drug dealer of two-bit drug dealers. Like, he'll come after you for $5, and he'll breathe down your neck like it's hundreds and thousands of dollars, literally. So I guess that was supposedly what was going on, according to people that we have spoken to since then. And supposedly he was getting a lot of pressure to pay him back. So, of course, he knows. And again, that's why I feel so guilty in my own mind, because I reached out to him that morning. You know what I'm saying? So it's like I brought back in his mind, even though maybe he was still thinking about this anyway. Who knows? But then I bring this back into his head like, oh, there's money right there.
The suitcase is an interesting piece of information. As the Barons told us that it looked like a suitcase that Robert used to keep stored up in the apartment above the restaurant, a suitcase that was missing. From the blood evidence in the car, it seems as though Robert must have been taken away in the car. So what could have been in the suitcase? Cash? Items from the attempted cleanup? No one knows for sure, because the suitcase has never been recovered.
I mean, there were some suitcases upstairs from when they had gone on vacation. And again, what are you wheeling in a suitcase?
It's interesting that nobody really talked about that. Nobody really even talked to put a big onus on the safe either, to be honest with you.
Somebody had driven the car. Somebody was actually using the vehicle still. After the fact, people that lived on the street where it was parked at had seen it moved and then back there, parked there again. Supposedly there was another vehicle being driven by somebody else at the time, a pickup truck.
Brittany has been frustrated that even with the video, there's been no movement in her father's case.
You could tell just, I mean, the tall guy with black hair. He's in a tan t-shirt. I don't think you're seeing many people in a tan t-shirt on January 25th. And a state corporal also witnessed him in a tan t-shirt outside of the restaurant that night. Said she saw someone tall with black hair in a tan t-shirt and shorts outside of Gigiarelli's the time of the crime. And then there you go. You have a video of a guy in a tan t-shirt and shorts. So how many people do you think were walking around in a tan t-shirt and shorts? I mean, you could just tell it's him, though. He just has a very distinct look to him. I don't know exactly when it happened, but it had to be sometime after 10:30 on, and these people are outside around 11. These people on video are having a drug deal, and who's paying his drug dealer around 11:30, 12, pays off, plus has quite a bit more cash on him. So I'm going to say it happened already at that time, because he didn't just get money out of thin air. Right from the start, they were on to he was their prime suspect, and I couldn't figure out why at first. For maybe like 2 months, I was like, there's no way he did that. I was very confused why he was a suspect. And then, you know, they said his cousin helped him. Then digging deeper into it, I did my own detective work. And then you realize, oh, okay, this makes sense why they're suspects. Was arrested and in jail a few times after this happened to my dad. He's engaged to a girl, and they apparently went on the run. They ran away. They went to California. They were reported missing. You could find this article on the news. When they went missing, apparently, or when they were on the run to California, they went to at the time, stepdad made a post on Facebook claiming that stole all of his tools and killed Bobby and is now on the run. So who's going to put that publicly on social media if you have no knowledge to that? You're just going to literally put into the world to see that killed Bobby. And now no one's going to question this guy because he doesn't live in the vicinity for the DA to question him with something they told us. And well, so this person, he worked, who we got the dough from prior to this happening to my dad, and he knew what their bank run was and what they did, you know, with the money, what time the old man who owned the restaurant, what time he'd go out to take his money out to the bank after working there for so long. And he attacked this man with a crowbar and robbed him. So this isn't his first incident. It just so happened it got worse with my dad, apparently. But he had a mask on and they never identified him positively, but they all know it was him, but they never did anything about it.
We want to reiterate that no one has been publicly named a suspect by the DA's office. So we can't confirm that these people that Brittany refers to as suspects were considered persons of interest early on or even today. Robert's family members believe that some mistakes were made early on in the investigation, and they want to see justice for Robert. They were told that the amount of blood at the restaurant and in the car indicated that whatever had happened, the injuries were not survivable. Robert has since been declared deceased, but the DA's office seems hesitant to push forward without a body, and the family told us that they haven't had much communication with the district attorney. Here's Mark.
The DA's office, was running the investigation from the very beginning. I think the people involved, the various people that I dealt with, I think they worked hard. I think they cared. I think they cared about finding out what happened. Generally seemed to be decent people. I mean, we had heard from people that knew the current DA that he was waiting to find Bob before he moved on anything. But, obviously the further along we are here, you know, these people are out there free. You know, the family would understand if they took these people or whomever to trial and it didn't work out because they couldn't find Bob. We would understand. So that's kind of a point we'd like to get across, which I don't think we have to anyone at this point. I tried to do that last time with the last anniversary, which is when the local television stations come around and cover it, but they ultimately didn't put that on the air. I don't think I'm speaking just for myself. You know, if they move forward and unfortunately they weren't able to get a conviction because, you know, perhaps they couldn't find Bob, we would understand they need to move forward. They need to do it. Quite frankly, in the case of finding my brother, I don't believe we'll uncover any forensic evidence. What I'm getting at is the DNA from the other people, not from Bob being completely gone. I meant from, from the ability to solve the case. So the whole point of finding him is basically to prove that he's dead. But we were told, he was dead. He definitely died there.
While the family believes that they know who was responsible, rumors still circulate throughout the community. After part one aired, we had an unprecedented amount of locals contact us, and most of them said that they heard that Robert had a gambling problem and owed a gambling debt to the mob, but no one had any firsthand knowledge of this. The Barons told us that Robert didn't gamble. His father was known to be a big gambler who frequently made trips to the Atlantic City casinos, but that wasn't Robert's thing, and his father passed away many years ago. We also received messages about Bobby's potential involvement, but no one seemed to bring up these other people. Perhaps rumors about the mafia are just more sensational, and that's why that storyline gets told over and over. As for Bobby, we couldn't help but feel like aspects of his story were strange, like the fact that he said he was carrying $111,000 on him that day, or that detail about reports of the restaurant door being locked around 8 p.m. We couldn't help but wonder if there was more to the story. Despite being accused, Bobby says one person in particular has always had his back, and that's his Uncle Mark.
All four just phony, though. They'll still give people the time of day to their face and their mind, their back. That's a small town for you. Well, that's all phony. That's why I just don't enjoy that at all. So that's why I prefer to just be a loner. Whatever anybody's told you, you're getting the real thing from me here today. You're getting everything is basically raw and uncut here. My family hasn't told you that really the only person who's had my back through all this in interviews with people is my Uncle Mark, believe it or not. My Uncle Mark is the only one who's gone to bat for me completely, and I'll never be able to thank him enough for that.
Mark expressed this sentiment to us during our interview.
I mean, I've always believed that Bob wasn't involved in what happened to his father, you know, directly. Obviously, he knew this kid from years before, but I never believed Bob's dad was his best friend.
But Nicole also told us that she agrees. She believes the only thing Bobby was guilty of was getting involved with the wrong crowd.
My brother would not ever do anything to harm my dad. No way.
Mm-mm. He switched up his friend crowd years prior to that and started hanging out with the wrong group of people. That's what it was. And, you know, I think that he had some demons in his own mind, had things going on. Like, we all go through personal things at some point in time. Some people just are worse than others. Some people's situation are worse than others, obviously. And I think he wasn't in the best mental health and started hanging out with the wrong crowd.
When we asked Maria about Bobby, she said this.
I don't believe my son had any involvement with his father. It's possible that he knows a little something more that, you know, we try to ask him that over these last five, close to 6 years, but that he doesn't know anything what happened after that, after he was dropped off at his apartment.
It's been a long 6 years without Robert. Robert's friend Jason told us that he wants the world to remember his friend for his kind and giving spirit.
I went through a divorce while Bobby was still around. He knew it was playing its toll on me, and it was one day I started mentioning about splitting assets and said, well, you know, I may have to get an attorney. I said, because there's a lot of assets that we have. You know, I said, but damn, I said, Bobby, I said, you know, divorce attorneys, I said, you're talking $10,000, $15,000. I don't have money like that to just throw away. And he literally offered, hey, if you need $5,000-$10,000 so you don't get screwed, he's like, I'll give it to you. He's like, don't worry. He's like, just let me know. Whatever you need, he's like, I'll help you. He's like, I know what you're going through. And he offered to just help me with $5,000-$10,000. And that's not something that many people could do or even would do if they could. That's the type of person he was. Larry, the contractor, when he found out that he had cancer, like Larry went through a really, really rough spell with his cancer. You know, he donated, I don't know, 20, 30 trays of pizza for some type of benefit for Larry. He would always give Larry advances with cash when Larry was short or if he needed something. After Bobby went missing, I found out like a lot of information from the kids that how much he was actually helping Larry out that I wasn't even aware of until they told me. But even my daughter's first birthday, it was brought up in conversation, and
me and Bobby were talking. I said, geez, I said, well, you know, where do I have it? You know, we got a lot of people. She's a baby, so we don't want to have it at a, you know, a bounce house or something like that. And he said, oh, he's like, hell, he's like, have it here. He's like, I'll make some pizza. You could bring some food. You could cook in the kitchen, whatever you want. He's like, just have it here. So we ended up, he shut down, turned around. He made 10, 15 trays of pizza, made a couple pans of pasta, and wouldn't accept a dime from me as payment, you know, for the food or, you know, using the place, nothing. He would not take a penny from me. That's the type of person he was.
Robert's children were still young adults when they tragically lost their father so unexpectedly. Nicole told us that it's completely changed the trajectory of her life, and it's been a struggle to find a path forward without her father.
Your brain just does not function the same as since tragedy. And I know my dad would want to see me happy because my happiness was his happiness. You know, and he made that very, and he showed that to me. My dad was always one to show his love, too. At this age, at the age of 33, I'm afraid I'm going to be living in agony for the rest of my life. I try to get by and do the best I can, but I'm absolutely not okay. One of the hardest parts about this is the fact that I have to relive it because we don't have closure. Thank goodness we still have each other. Imagine if more family members were in there. What if my mom was in there with my dad and that happened to both of them? I'm very big on counting my blessings, and I want to know where my dad is, and I want justice for my dad, for myself and my family. You know, while we're breathing, I want us to experience some kind of peace.
Hearing from Robert's children, you get this vision of who he was to them as a father. He was always there when they needed him. His absence has left a gaping hole in their lives. For Brittany, she's haunted by the loss of her father and constantly reminded of all the things they're missing out on.
Whenever I'd have anything wrong or just in general, you just want someone to talk to, he's just your person to talk to. And I feel so lost now for 6 years that I don't have that. Because even when I was away, I would talk to him. I remember people are like, oh my gosh, I don't tell my dad anything. I'm like, no, like literally I talk to him all day. Still to this day, I don't believe that it's real. It doesn't, this stuff doesn't happen in this area. I would just like call his phone sometimes to like listen to his voicemail. I just remember like walking down the steps and he'd get in after doing the dough or just like on a Sunday just sitting here, and I either get out of the shower and I like knew he came in because my dogs would be going nuts and I would go dad and he'd go daughter. Those simple things, like you just remember saying, and like, and he'd have like a very distinct whistle when he would walk into the house. And I'm like, I'm never going to hear that whistle again walking in the house. For what reason? Like, why? My whole family, our whole lives got ruined. I'm 23 thinking everything is fine. I'm finishing grad school. I missed 3 weeks. I don't even know how I ended up finishing. I almost just dropped out, but I didn't. It was just insane. I just remember like being home for 3 weeks and I just, like, we're having search parties for my dad, like a vigil outside our like, restaurant. I was like, what is my life? What? You don't think you're talking to your dad that he's coming to visit you in Philadelphia and you're going to have a day with them and everything is just fine. You know, every day is fine. And then it's, oh, I'm at a search party for my dad. What? Like now I have to somehow readjust your life. And I know it happens to millions of people, but it's just like, I still to this day don't know how to cope with it. And I guess it's also, there's just no justice for us either. So that doesn't make it any easier. He's not found. These people aren't arrested. Even though that's not going to bring us happiness, it's the most that can be realistically done. The district attorney's office really doesn't inform us of anything. Unless our family has scheduled a few meetings throughout the years for updates and information, if we hear anything other than that, they don't ever, ever, ever reach out to us to tell us anything.
Bobby was very open with us about all of his struggles in life, but he told us that his father's disappearance was the event that has made him fight to turn things around. And now Bobby has a son of his own, a grandson that Robert never got the chance to meet. And he wants to be better for his son and be the kind of father that Robert was for him.
Let me tell you, I went on a heroin bonanza afterwards, spending cash, just trying to take myself out of the equation, essentially. Trying to kill myself without trying to kill myself.
Every day is a struggle. There's no way to sugarcoat any of this. Every day I blame myself, even though I know that I'm not to blame for what happened. I blame myself for bringing these people around and getting involved in drugs when I knew that it was the wrong thing to do. And I mean, these people took away the most important thing in the world to me. I just can't put into words what my dad meant to me to completely exemplify properly what he meant to me, because there's no adjective that does it justice to tell you. He was my whole world. I would have literally died for him if it came down to that. It's tough talking about my dad because of the love that I had for him. I'll never be properly over anything that's happened. Answers are more important to me than anybody else for a myriad of reasons. And I miss my father and my old wife so much. I need resolution for my family and myself. I can't go on with my life until I know what happened to my dad. I just can't. I cannot move forward. I'm stuck. I'm stagnant. But now I have a son. I have a 1.5-year-old son. That's what's keeping me going here. Yeah. I've been trying to learn how to live here for the last few years on my own. It's like something told me that I need to get away from Old Forge, this small little town where everybody knows everybody, where nothing good has happened for me, and I needed to start over.
For Robert's wife, Maria, it's been difficult to move on without answers. And she still sees the people she believes are responsible around their small town, just going about their business, while her family is still waiting for answers and peace.
I've seen him from time to time, two of them, in fact, I've seen from time to time. I've seen the other one that we think is a suspect. I've seen him at grocery stores, local, and a few other that they mention are involved. I've seen them through these last 5 years. They've been in jail through the years. It is hard because maybe it was, I don't know if it was early this year, I was going to a dollar store and a gentleman was opening the door. When I looked, it was who they think it is, the main suspect's brother. And he just looked at me and he just like walked up like he did a beeline right down the aisle in the store. And you want to say something. I don't really hardly even go out much. I really don't. Like, I hope to God he didn't suffer. I can't even say that in front of my daughters or my son. But I just say to myself, I just hope to God. We don't have no peace. We have no closure, no justice. I mean, we don't even have a resting place for him. It's horrible. And the DA has been really not a big help to us. I'll never be healed inside or out. It's something that, no, I don't think, unless you go through it yourself, nobody knows that feeling. It's torture. It's on your mind every split second of the day, morning, noon, night, sleeping. I dream from time to time, but then I wake up and it's like, oh my goodness, it's like it was so real. There was dreams that I've had that he'd say, what's going on? How come nobody's at work? And wouldn't even want to discuss what happened to him.
So what happened to Robert Barron in late January of 2017? There have been so many rumors around the small town of Old Forge about who could be involved. Was it the mob? Was it about that civil judgment? And what about Bobby? The Barron family believes there was a group of people within the community that were involved. And one of those people had been friends with Bobby and spent a good amount of time at the restaurant. This person had enough knowledge to know the routine and where the money was. They also believe that others were called in to help with the disposal of Robert's body and the subsequent cleanup at the restaurant. There's a lot of physical evidence in this case. We know that they found a lot of Robert's blood and a tooth, but we don't know what other physical evidence the DA has that they're withholding. Was there any physical evidence left behind by the person or persons responsible for this? That we don't know. We hope that they do have more evidence that they're keeping close to the vest, and that someone will come forward with new information that will get this case moving again. But for now, many questions remain. Who had the motive and opportunity to carry out this crime? And would a group of small-town, low-level criminals, seeking cash for their next fix, have had the motivation to clean up the scene and dispose of a body? On one hand, you could call this cleanup sloppy, because there was a lot of evidence left behind. But on the other hand, it was sufficient enough that no one has ever been brought to justice. Robert's unsolved disappearance continues to haunt not only his family, but the whole town of Old Forge. Is there a murderer living amongst them? Giugiarelli's closed down after Robert went missing and is still closed today. It has been too painful for many family members to even drive by, much less open up shop without Robert there, especially knowing that something horribly violent happened to him inside of those walls, inside of that very place that was so dear to him. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Robert Barron, please contact the Lackawanna County District Attorney's Office at 570-963-6717.
Again, I've been doing a lot of stuff on my own, talking to people, doing things even though people think that I haven't. Little do they know that I have. Again, this was a completely botched investigation. There was almost nothing done at the outset. So they were essentially chasing the proverbial tail. They're having us just prance around in there. There was like 20 people in there that morning. They're having us stand in the bar area there. They were hardly speaking to the family because of me, because I had hired an attorney and they were all mad. They treated my family like garbage.
I played out multiple different scenarios in my head. I'm thinking that if they were hiding in there, they were looking for money in there, trying to rob the place, and my dad kicked them out. And they weren't hearing what they wanted to hear from my dad. And my dad might have got mad and put up a fight. And I think that they started fighting. However they got in there, I think that my dad didn't give them what they wanted. Like, my dad wasn't having that. And he put up a fight. So there was a tooth found in the sink, one of the sinks in the restaurant, in the waiting area. I mean, that alone tells me that there was a fight in there. I mean, I know that they could have just, you know, knocked him out, but I think my dad put up a fight. I felt like he was fighting for his business. I do not believe that this one man went in and did that to my dad. I mean, my dad was at the time 58. So he wasn't as quick and as strong as he was back in his prime, of course. I knew my dad knew how to put up a fight. You know, I knew my dad had strength. So I definitely believe there were multiple people in there. And even if it was just one person, still, you can hit somebody the wrong way or knock them out from the behind, and that's it. So even if it was just one person. But the reason why I'm 99.9% positive it wasn't only one person, somebody needed help to move my dad, because his body wasn't in there. They put his body somewhere, so one person didn't do that alone.
That brings us to the end of episode 380. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this series. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. We're on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you like our show, please give us a 5-star rating and review. You can also support the show by contributing on Patreon. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be covering a case from Kansas. Thanks for listening. Hey Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.